Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to really get into the details of some fascinating new research. And today we've got a paper that honestly looks like it could be a bit of a game changer. It's titled Mean Field Langevin Diffusions with a Density-Dependent Temperature by Yuju Huang and Zachariah Malik. Now, if you've ever dealt with optimization, you know the headache of non-convex problems. Trying to find the absolute lowest point, the global minimum, in some really bumpy, complex landscape, it's tough. You get stuck in these little dips, these local minima, all the time. It slows things down, forces compromises. But this paper, it seems to offer a smarter way, a new approach that might just give us both speed and accuracy. So, yeah, let's unpack this.
Absolutely. And to really get why this is exciting, maybe we should first quickly touch on how things are usually done. The standard approach. So the traditional workhorse for escaping those local traps is the Langevin stochastic differential equation, the SDE. Think of it like modeling a tiny particle moving around on that bumpy surface you mentioned. It's pushed by two main things. First, there's the gradient descent part. That's like, you know, gravity always pulling it downhill towards the nearest dip.
Okay, so that finds a minimum, but maybe not the best one, right? It just finds the closest dip. So how does it get out if it's stuck?
That's where the second bit comes in. The random perturbation part. It adds noise, like shaking the landscape a little. This random energy gives the particle a chance to, well, jump out of a local minimum it might otherwise be completely trapped in.
Ah, okay. And I remember there's this temperature parameter, lambda, that controls how much shaking there is. So like more heat, more shaking helps it escape those traps.
That's a great analogy. More heat, more energy, more shaking. But here's the catch, the trade-off that's always been the problem with the standard Langevin STE. If you set that temperature, lambda, really low, you get less shaking. Mm. Now, that can be good. Over a long, long time, the particle might eventually settle into a really deep, accurate minimum. But the huge downside is it takes forever to get there. It's potentially very precise, but just painfully slow.
Right. Okay. So you're waiting ages for maybe a good result. What if you just crank up the heat, then speed things up?
Well, you can. If you use a larger lambda, a higher temperature, you get way more shaking. And yeah, the particle escapes those local minima much faster. Seems good, right? Quicker exploration. But the flip side is, with all that shaking, it might just bounce right over the true global minimum.
Where?
Or it might never settle down properly into the bottom of it. So you get speed, but you often sacrifice accuracy. It can be fast, but kind of sloppy.
Got it. So for years, people have been stuck with this dilemma. Go slow and hope for precision, or go fast and risk being inaccurate. You couldn't really get both. Okay. This is where it gets really interesting then. How does this new paper tackle that?
Exactly. That trade-off has been, well, a fundamental limitation. And this paper asks a really clever question. What if the temperature wasn't fixed? What if instead of us setting it, the temperature could somehow adjust itself based on, well, based on where the particles are, based on the diffusion's own density?
Wait, so the system itself controls its own temperature?
Yeah.
Based on how crowded certain areas are?
Huh.
That sounds dynamic, almost like it's aware of itself.
That's the core idea. It's self-regulating. So instead of a constant amount of shaking everywhere, the level of random perturbation depends on the probability density, let's call it crustity, at the particle's current location. The new equation they propose basically has this term, F, controlling the noise. The Foot function links the temperature directly to the particle density.
Okay, let me see if I can picture this. So imagine lots of these little particles exploring the landscape. If a bunch of them get stuck in a local minimum, a little dip, the density there, or white, goes way up, right? It gets crowded. And this function F is increasing. So high density means stronger random kicks, more temperature just where it's crowded.
Precisely. That's the intuition. High density suggests we might be stuck here. So the system automatically increases the temperature locally, giving those trap particles a stronger nudge to escape.
And the other way around, too. If a particle is wandering around in a flat area far from any minimum.
Exactly. Low density means low temperature, less random shaking. This allows the gradient descent part, the downhill pull, to guide the particle more precisely towards a potential minimum without being constantly jostled around too much.
Wow. So it's not just random shaking anymore. It's strategic shaking. It focuses the heat where the system detects a bottleneck, where particles are clustered. That sounds much smarter.
It really is. That's why we call it self-regulated. The system uses its own evolving density as a kind of map of the landscape's tricky spots. It dynamically dials up the temperature in those crowded local minima and dials it down elsewhere. And importantly, the specific mathematical form they chose for this function often involves lambda and another parameter eta, and the density raised to a power m minus 1 isn't arbitrary. This specific choice cleverly makes the whole process mathematically equivalent to performing gradient descent on a different related energy function, a convex one, P bay.
Convex. So one with a single guaranteed minimum.
Exactly. This equivalence is huge, theoretically. It means that even though the original landscape is bumpy, the overall system, guided by this density-dependent temperature, is always moving downhill towards a single, well-defined optimal state represented by that convex functional. It provides a really solid mathematical underpinning.
Okay, that sounds incredibly elegant. Self-regulating temperature linked to a convex functional. But making that work mathematically, that can't have been easy. What were the big hurdles?
Oh, definitely not easy. As you're right, the math gets quite involved. This type of equation, where the coefficients depend on the distribution of the solution itself, isn't your standard, well-behaved SDE. It falls into a category called Nemitsky-type SDEs, which are related to but distinct from the more common McKeon-Vlasov equations. The big issue here is that standard techniques often rely on assumptions about, say, the smoothness or continuity of the coefficients, things that just don't hold true when your temperature depends on the density in this way.
So the usual tools for proving that a solution even exists or that it's unique, they just don't apply off the shelf.
Pretty much. Standard proofs often need things like boundedness conditions on the functions involved, which you might not have for these really complex, non-convex landscapes you want to apply this to in the real world. So authors had to bring in some more advanced machinery. They leaned heavily on something called Wasserstein gradient flow theory.
Oh, Wasserstein. Okay, that sounds serious. What's the core idea there?
It's a way to analyze how probability distributions evolve over time, thinking of them as flowing downhill in a specific mathematical space, the space of probability measures. It's powerful because it works even when you don't have those nice smoothness conditions.
So instead of tracking every particle, they looked at how the whole cloud of particles evolves.
Kind of, yeah. They first tackled a related equation, the nonlinear Fokker-Planck equation. This describes how the probability density, right cuff, changes over time. They managed to prove existence and uniqueness for that equation first, using the Wasserstein gradient flow framework. That was theorem 4.2 in the paper.
Okay, so they understood the collective behavior, the density evolution. How did they get back to the individual particle paths, the SDE itself?
That involved another clever step using something called a superposition principle, specifically a version developed by Figali and Trevisan. This principle essentially lets you construct a solution to the SDE, the particle paths, from the solution of the Fokker-Planck equation, the density evolution. It connects the microscopic particle behavior to the macroscopic density behavior. That gave them theorem 5.1, the existence of the SDE solution.
That's quite a mathematical journey. And did they show that this whole process actually finds the right answer in the long run? Does it converge?
Yes, that was crucial. They proved, in theorem 7.1 and 7.2, that as time goes towards infinity, the system's distribution converges to a unique invariant distribution. And importantly, this final distribution is precisely the one that minimizes that associated convex functional G we talked about earlier. So yes, the theory guarantees it finds the optimal state eventually.
Okay, the theory sounds solid, even if the math is intense. But the real question is, does it actually work in practice? Did they test it? What happened?
They did. That's section 8. They ran numerical simulations to see how it stacked up. They used a classic test case, a double well function. Imagine a landscape with two valleys, but one is significantly deeper than the other. The shallow one is the local minimum. The deep one is the global minimum you actually want. And crucially, they started their simulated particles in the shallow valley, the suboptimal local minimum. They deliberately put the system in the trap.
Right, the perfect test. See if it gets stuck like the old method or if it can escape and find the real solution. How did it compare to the standard Langevin SDE?
Well, like we discussed, for the standard SDE, even when they used the best parameters found in other studies, you clearly saw the trade-off. You could tweak it to escape faster, but then it wouldn't settle accurately in the deep well. Or you could make it accurate, but it took a really long time to escape the shallow well. Still that compromise.
Okay, makes sense. And the new density-dependent method, drumroll.
The results were pretty striking. You can see it in their figure one. The new method with the density-dependent temperature, it simultaneously improved both the accuracy, how well it found the bottom of the deep global minimum, and the speed, how quickly it escaped the shallow local minimum and converged.
Whoa. So no trade-off. It was actually faster and more accurate.
Exactly. It found the better solution, and it found it faster than the optimized standard methods. It really seemed to break that fundamental compromise.
That is. That's genuinely impressive. It overcomes that core limitation we started with. That's the aha. moment right there.
It really felt like it. And they also showed that by adjusting that parameter in their temperature function, they can make the random kicks even more sensitive to the density. A higher Meng value seemed to make it react more strongly to crowding, further speeding up the convergence in their tests. It adds another layer of control.
Incredible. So wrapping this up, we dove into a paper today that genuinely offers a new way to think about optimization on these tricky non-convex landscapes. By letting the system's temperature, its random exploration energy, adapt based on where the particles actually are, based on density, they've seemingly found a way to get both speed and accuracy, escaping traps quickly while still finding the true best solution precisely, overcoming that long-standing trade-off.
Yeah, it's a really elegant solution. And the implications could go beyond just this type of optimization problem. The mathematical techniques they developed, dealing with these Nomitsky-type equations using Wasserstein flows, that could be valuable in other areas.
Yeah.
Think about machine learning, for instance. Training complex models often involve similar optimization challenges. This might lead to faster, more robust training methods. They even mention potential links to things like understanding porous medium equations in physics, how fluids flow through complex materials.
Right. The tools themselves might be broadly applicable. It really leaves you thinking, doesn't it? If a mathematical system can develop this kind of, well, almost situational awareness, knowing where it's getting stuck and dynamically changing its strategy to find the best outcome, what other really complex real-world problems could benefit from that kind of self-regulating intelligence, from scientific discovery to maybe even engineering complex systems? Lots to ponder. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive.